You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the violent, large judgment. My own sweet time didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, once again, as always, Shane Told, and this week, y'all are in for a treat. This is one of my favorite episodes ever. I just went back and listened to it again. It was so much fun recording it, but listening back was even more fun. And this week, it's Lead Singer Syndrome history. This is the first ever live episode of the show, live from Sinnerfest 2.0 in Norfolk, Virginia. That's right. Just last weekend, me, myself, Steve from Punchline, and 40 other people were down there all hanging out. People came from all over the world. I've told you this group is special, but this is beyond anything I ever thought when I started this club. What has it been? Just over 2 years ago. Blows my mind, but man, we had a blast. I want to thank everybody that was in attendance for this live taping, and I especially have to give a huge shout out to Steve from Punchline for being just the best dude, just embracing this so hard, and I know you're listening, Steve. I just loved every minute of this, so thank you so much. Before we get into this, and believe me, I want to keep this intro very short. I do want to remind you, you can always get in touch with me. I think I forgot to say this last week, but you can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I'm on all the social media. Feel free to hit me up with suggestions for future guests of the show. Really anything, you know? Just hit me up. I love getting emails. I try to respond to everybody. Sometimes I'm a little bad at that. Lately, I've been a little bad at that. But I do try, and I do read every single message and email I get. So please hit me up. Also, if you want to help the show, I mean, this is the episode where you're going to find out what it's all about, but look in to the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. If you're a big fan of the show, if you've listened to a bunch of them, if you want more content, check it out. If you want to be a part of an amazing group that we have here, we meet up all over the world for things like Sinnerfest, for live podcasts. We have a great Facebook group. We talk about all sorts of things. It's the only place to get Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise. And it is, of course, what helps keep this show happening. I'm doing this thing myself. I can use all the help that I can get. So the link is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. For as little as $6 a month, it gets you in. And yes, if you do like the show, consider becoming a sinner. I also want to give a big shout out to my nephew, Liam. Today, Tuesday, April 30th, Liam is 5,000 days old. So congratulations, Liam, on that milestone. More on that in a bit. It will all make sense. Anyway, without further ado, here is my conversation with Steve from Punchline at Sinnerfest 2.0 in Norfolk, Virginia.
Hello.
and gentlemen, we're here at Sinnerfest live with Steve of Punchline. Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
For doing this. Yeah. This is the first ever live podcast I've ever done.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And we have all of these people are my sinners, my super sinners that pledge every... Make some noise. That pledge every single month to keep this show going and growing. Help keep the lights on around here. The light's currently off, but that's okay. So we're here live in Norfolk, Virginia. And I love that this worked out so well because you're playing tonight just down the road.
It seems very fortuitous that you're here and I'm here.
That's a big word. I don't know what that means. Very gratuitous, yes.
Fortuitous.
No, like, absolutely.
Good fortune.
It's amazing it worked out so well. And there's a couple people here that are, you know, fans have seen you on this tour so far with Less Than Jake. Yes.
Nice.
Which, there she
I
is.
I just met all 35 or so of you and have a little bit of each of your hand on my hand.
There you go. That's not weird at all. Well, how's the tour going so far?
The tour has been very good, very good. We have two shows left.
Oh,
and,
wow.
We grew up on Less Than Jake, so being on tour with them, we're total fanboys, and we're not shy about it. We covered one of their songs and released it the week that the tour started, and we've been having some great times with them. And
now, did they know you were going to do that, or was that kind of a surprise? We're here, we're on tour, we're fanboys, here's a cover.
Yeah, it was a surprise. We thought we would surprise them and just go for it, but it was well received, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you cover band songs and you send it to them, and it's only mildly received. I remember we covered a Get Up Kid song.
Oh, yeah. I'll Catch You, right?
We covered...
Oh, no, you covered that.
I covered
solo,
that,
right,
and then Punchline covered Holiday, but we did kind of a ska reggae version of it, and I sent it to Matt Pryor, and his response was... And he's cool. I love him. We're buds. And his response was, well, you covered it.
He's got a bit of that vibe, though. He was a guest of the show one time, and I think I was super nervous for that one, because without the Get Up Kids, there's no Silverstein, you know? So having him on, and it was like, I'd say things like, I'd talk about, I don't know, like emo, and he'd be like, we don't give a shit about emo. It's like, all right, well, next question. You know, so he's got one of those personalities, but I don't know. I think covering a band song and showing it to them, there's no way you can do that without being scared, terrified of it.
Yeah, my fingers were crossed. They were crossed very, very tightly.
So who played... Well, I mean, you guys have a kind of a ska background. Your music has evolved quite far away from ska. There's not a lot of upstrokes these days. So when you went back to do that song, you picked one with horns, first of all. Because not all... Well, I guess every Less Than Jake song has horns pretty much. But who played the horns for the track?
We didn't do horns. We thought that we would keep it to our...
Oh, there's no horns in the song? I thought I heard them.
No, we did the horns with just lead guitar.
Oh, it's just guitar. Trevor, I didn't even know. It was cool.
He figured out all the horn parts and arranged the guitars to emulate the horns, and he did a fantastic job. Trevor, if you're out there listening, I love you, man.
That's crazy. I guess because now people just listen to music on your phone, which is terrible, by the way. Like, people go to all this trouble to record a record, make it perfect, and then people are listening like this. On their fucking, like, holding the phone up to their ear. It's ridiculous.
I feel like I've been in social situations recently where you're outside of a club and people are like, yo, listen to this song, and they're holding the phone up to your ear.
Yeah.
And it's bad enough when you're subjecting yourself to it, but man, being put on blast. You know, I want somebody to come up to me with a really nice pair of, you know, studio monitor headphones.
Yes.
That's how you do it.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. That's like the... You know, those bands that used to travel on Warped Tour?
Yeah.
And, like, forcing headphones on the head of somebody?
Oh, I did that a lot. Did that a whole lot.
Were you guys one of those Warped Tour bands? Walking around the lines and stuff?
For sure.
To sell
CDs?
We
made so many fans doing that.
Yeah.
Met so many people, for sure.
I think the funniest story to go back was, this is, like, 2005. We were playing with Hawthorne Heights. We played at the Las Vegas House of Blues, like, in the Mandalay Bay. So I got up kind of late, walked backstage, and it's Vegas, right? Walked backstage, and there's some weird kid in there, like, kind of spinning around in the chair, and I don't know who he is. And he's like, you got to hear my band. We're awesome. I'm like, what's this guy doing in here? Takes headphones, puts them on my head. I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, this is actually pretty good. It was Ronnie Radke from Escape the Fate.
Oh, wow.
Before they were, like, he was just a local, you know, kid in a local band in Las Vegas that somehow snuck in to play bands his music, which is pretty sick.
Do you think that you have a sense for, so there's been some people I've met on this tour or, you know, in the last year, younger people in bands or in some realm of the music industry, and you can just tell this guy's going to be, this guy or this girl is going to be doing this forever. You know, like I guaranteed this guy's going to be around in 10 years.
I was like, this kid is crazy. That's all I thought. Like, to be honest, I mean, he was like kind of like just really fidgeting around, and I was like, this guy's a weirdo.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of forgot all about it, but he kept saying the name of the band, Escape the Fate, Escape, we're going to be huge, Escape the Fate. And then what I thought was even funnier, follow up, they did like Warped Tour maybe a year or two after that, and they were on like the Ernie Ball stage. And he came on stage and was like, yeah, I know we're playing the like piece of shit small stage this year, but next year we're going to be on main stage. And he was right, they were.
Bold. Bold.
Very, 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 very bold.
Speaking of headphones, you know, being subjected to the headphone thing, I miss listening to music and music with people in cars. You know, like, hey, come to my car, I want to show you this new song. Like, we just, you know, we just finished our record. Come check out a track in my car. I feel like I have so many good memories of doing the car sit and listening.
I always listen to music in my car, but I still do that. If I'm making a demo or mixing something or we get a mix, I always go out to the car to listen to it. The car test.
Yeah,
it's the only test as far as I'm concerned. You know?
I failed a lot of car tests.
Absolutely. So first time on the show. It's so good to have you. This very historic live event. What's that? A cheat sheet there?
Oh, I just made some notes. Just sometimes I black out and then don't say the name of my band or myself or where we're from or any background.
I love that you did that. I mean, I do a lot of these over the phone. Maybe people do that, but I've never seen anyone whip out a card.
Yeah, so the first note on here is the number 13,945. Do you know the significance of that number?
There's no 37s in there, so I'm not sure.
There isn't. That is the number of days old that you are, Shane.
That I am?
Yeah. Yeah.
As of today?
Yeah, I woke up this morning and I thought, what can I talk to Shane about? And that was the first thing that I could come up with is I'm going to tell him how many days old he is.
13.
So, yeah.
So 13,945.
Yeah. So you're going to be...
I've been drunk at least 10,000 of those.
Yeah. So as you all are realizing at this moment, you'll be turning 14,000 on June 14th.
June 14th. Okay.
Yeah. I set a reminder in my phone to remind you.
And, okay, so is this like an excuse to celebrate more birthdays or something? Like, it's my 1,000th day.
I think it's a big deal.
Of birth?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I thought about it. I started thinking about it a couple years ago, and I realized that I had surpassed my 10,000th day. And I was like, my 10,000th day on Earth, I was probably just at Target or something.
Yeah.
And I wish I could have known, you know? So... is anyone here under 27 and 100 or so days? So you're not yet 10,000. So you should figure out.
I'm really clamped now.
You should. You should. I can set a reminder in my phone for you. I believe with my plan I can do unlimited reminders.
Yeah, that's Brian. That's Brian, not to be confused with Brian over there.
Nice. Clueless Brian.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, what other information? Do you have anything else there to share about me that you've found out this morning?
So that was the only one about you besides our mutual friends.
Yes.
So I would like to give Jason Link, Double J, a shout out
because
he connected us the other week. And I love him. And Jason, if you're listening, thank you for being a friend.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have Jason on a bonus episode.
Awesome.
For the people here.
Cool.
He's an interesting one because he used to work for Victory Records as the art guy for about 10 years. So he, you know, the Bayside album cover where they're like, the guy's like looking off the building. Does anyone know that one?
Yeah.
That's him, actually. That's him. So he designed the artwork.
He did the bird.
He did the bird. He did the Bayside bird. There's probably a tattoo of it somewhere.
Can
in this
I drop?
Room. There you go.
I feel like I almost dropped this mic.
There you go.
Like,
so shout out to and he's with Epitaph. He works over at Epitaph now. Great dude. Got kicked out of our show in LA once for being too drunk. So he's a great dude. He's a great dude. So yeah, shout out to Double J.
I'll throw him under the bus here. We have the he left me a voicemail in 2008 after he had listened to one of our records. We came out with a record called Just Say Yes, and I sent it to him, and he called me a couple weeks later with it left me this like 5 minute long drunk voicemail about how the link I sent him expired and he felt so bad, and he didn't get to listen to it until the record actually came out, and he's just telling all these stories, and he said at one point, he's like, I don't know, man. I just remember meeting you guys. I think you were all on roller skates. And I was like, I don't remember us all being on roller skates. But so I have this voice memo, or I have this voicemail saved somewhere in MP3 form. And I always mess with him and say that when we re-release that album, that's going to be the bonus track.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love those the old school. Yeah, like all those bands used to do that. What happened to that, man? I guess that because the... I hate to say it, but like the CD is dead.
Yeah.
So no one actually listens to the CD. So having the like, you know, where you have to wait like 8, 10, 12 minutes and then there's something at the end of the track.
Yeah.
I guess people just don't do that anymore.
It'd be fun to hide things on Spotify, you know, just put it under a different name or something.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah. We're taking ideas.
That's a great idea, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to do a song. So, you know, songs are typically the same tempo throughout and mm-hmm. typically the same key in the style of music that we do. I want to do a song where there's alternate bridges for it. So,
okay.
So, you know, bridge A, it's 140 BPMs, as is bridge B and bridge C. They're all 32 bars, and then make it so that people can, you know, open up GarageBand or whatever and drop in a different
right.
bridge.
Like a choose your own adventure
yeah.
of music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I like that.
Are you more into the heavy stuff? Well, we got this is a breakdown in this yeah. song. Or are you into the poppy stuff? We've got the super nice mellow.
Yeah. I love a good bridge.
That yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, it's I was there I think that might be in my notes. You write great bridges in your band.
Thank you.
You know who else writes? You know Les and Jake also writes great bridges.
Oh yeah.
Is that a focus of a song? Because so many times I feel like songwriters, they really focus on like a intro, verse, chorus, repeat it again, and then it's like, all right, how do we get back to that chorus again? And so many of the times it's just like recycling a pre-chorus idea
yeah.
or re-intro, and it's like, how can we do that? But I feel like you guys take a real conscious approach of how to make a bridge really have an impact.
I think our typical approach is, you know, really use your imagination to take the song somewhere
yeah.
crazy over this bridge and bring it back. I don't like the, sometimes people are like, yeah, man, we got this verse and chorus, we'll just come up with a bridge. I'm like, who are you, man?
Or put in like an instrumental
yeah.
you know, solo.
Like, yeah.
I mean, there's some great songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit. Does that have a bridge? Isn't it just the solo? I know, I'm trying to think of like other memorable songs that don't have bridges. There's probably tons of them.
Yeah. I don't know. We're going to have to make a whole podcast.
Occasionally
about
though, I will say though, you'll write a song and you know, a lot of times, like, let's say you're in like, we're going to get a little musical here, but like, let's say you're just in like the key of G, you know, G chord.
Love G.
Love G. Great. Great. Great chord.
Let's give it up
great,
for G major.
Great note. Yeah. G. Woo. G, baby. G string, not a huge fan. No, I'm not talking like that. It just always goes out of tune.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
But, you know, let's say you're in the... let's say you're in the key of G, though, and, like, you're writing this kind of, like, more of a happy song, and then you don't want the bridge to be in G, so then you put the bridge in, like, E minor.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it just changes the whole tone of the song and kind of ruins it. You know what I mean? There needs to be some finesse, otherwise the bridge can be... I can spell trouble for the song.
For sure. Yeah, I like trying to keep somewhat of a consistent mood
right.
for the song.
Yeah.
So it's like you
exactly.
want the bridge to go somewhere different, but not too different. I don't know, man.
Exactly. I don't know either. So clearly you're a huge nerd. this number thing. And I want to get all into this 37 stuff because I've got so many questions.
For sure.
But before we do that, I want to talk about your early life. Have you always been a huge nerd?
I think so.
So where does this stem from? You're from Pittsburgh.
Yes.
What was it like, you know, in the beginning for you, growing up, going to school, you know, when did music kind of become a part of your life and all that stuff?
I grew up outside of Pittsburgh in a town called Belle Vernon. Beautiful little town. You should all come.
Do we have anyone from Pittsburgh here? Nobody? We have some people from Pennsylvania, though, right?
Nice, nice. I had a beautiful day off in Philly the other day. Loved it, loved it.
There you go.
But yeah, grew up outside of Pittsburgh in this town, Belle Vernon. And I think I was about 5 or 6 are my earliest memories of listening to the radio and hearing Bruce Springsteen and Bon Jovi and Def Leppard. And I mean, I just loved it from the jump, walking around the house with a stereo on my shoulder, like the cover of the Bruce Springsteen album. And I feel like looking back now, like, I feel like I knew from like age, from like 7, I'm like, I'm doing this.
Really?
Yeah. And I wanted a guitar, and I asked my parents for a guitar for my 7th birthday, and they got me a toy guitar. And I was like, this is not a real guitar. I was like, the amp lights up when you strum the strings. This is a this is a light. This isn't an instrument.
Right.
And I was scarred for 7 years, and I got my first guitar at 14.
Wow, that's quite a long period of time. That's a little later than a lot of guys.
So I got my dark period out of the way from 7 to 14, the musicless time. And so 1994 is when I picked up the guitar.
What a year for music, by the way.
Weezer, Blue Album,
yep.
Green Day, Dookie. I'm sold, you know what I mean? And Punchline's actually we're releasing a covers EP called Songs from 94. And it's covers of songs from 1994.
That's a great idea.
We put out our cover of Jim Blossoms, Found Out About
Yes,
You.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yep. We were just on the road with them. And
oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It was cool. We played it, and Robin would come out and sing it with us.
Very cool.
It was super sweet. So 1994 was a big year. Started playing guitar, and then I met Chris, Punchline's bass player, and 96, and we started playing music right then and there. Punchline started in 97.
You're still here.
Yeah.
So when you were going to school, you and Chris went to high school together then? So what kind of kid were you like in high school? Were you like, you know, it's a hard age, right?
Totally.
To navigate
what you are,
what you're going to be. Like, were you more of a popular kind of kid? Were you into sports? Were you just into music to kind of keep your head down?
Like you said, I think I was kind of a nerd. And but I had an older brother, and his friends were in bands. So when I was a freshman, they were all seniors, and they needed a guitar player. So I was kind of like pulled into their crew. And goddamn, did I feel cool. So
right.
I lucked out, and I got pulled into this band, and all of a sudden we're learning NoFX songs and Rancid songs and Operation Ivy songs, and I was like, I'm home. This is where I should be. This is good.
Okay, so was that kind of how you discovered punk rock then?
Yeah.
Was it through those older kids?
Yeah, for sure. Through Chris and his friends
and
my brother's friends. Yeah.
So the Def Leppard records got a little dusty.
That's just the first stuff I remember
right,
hearing.
Right.
I know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, but we started playing and writing songs, and I sang some songs because, you know, it's like you start a band with your friends and you're like, who's going to sing? And it's usually like, well, someone's got to do it, you know?
You look around. It's funny because that's such a common theme on the show is how no lead singers really start out, I'm going to be a lead singer. They start out guitar players or they start out drummers.
Yeah.
But then there's always that moment where you kind of just like, well, who can carry a tune remotely in the room?
Yeah.
And inevitably that ends up being the singer, and they're terrible at first. And then over the years they get better.
Yeah.
And that's
it's
my
neat.
Story.
The group that we had, it was more like, hey, we're the people in the band, which is great because we're good people together. So like we'll figure out the instrument stuff after the fact. Because we know we got the people part right.
Totally. Well, that always happens too, because everyone starts out with a guitar. There's very few people, maybe some very unfortunate people, that start out and their parents get them like a bass or something. But it's true. At some point, someone's like, okay, well, someone needs to play bass.
Yeah.
So who's going to make the sacrifice to give up the guitar and go get a bass?
Yeah, right.
It always happens. Every band, it's the same thing.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
Yeah, I do remember the first song I wrote.
How is it?
It was called Nothing's Left. I actually remember how to play it too.
Nice. I remember.
I might play it for the people here later on. I cannot put it on this podcast though. It's terrible. But I remember it. Yeah.
I love asking people that. People typically light up, and you know, I feel like a lot of people do remember the first song. And did you like it? Do you still like it?
You know what? I said it was terrible. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
Like it makes sense at least. You know, it's got like a intro that becomes a verse, and then there's a chorus that's actually, you know, the classic, you know, E minor C G D progression. So it's you
great.
Know, it's yeah,
it, yeah.
And there's structure to it, and there's a little guitar solo. You know, I think what's funniest about it was, you know, I'm a kid. My parents have bought me all this stuff so I can play like a guitar and an amp, and I'm taking guitar lessons, and then my first song is like called Nothing's Left. Like I'm all like this depressed like kid, like just trying to sound cool. Like I won't, you know, I was fine, you know I was like, shit, how old would I have been? 12 maybe.
Yeah,
when I wrote
that's
that song.
A tough time.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's easier to be 12 than 38, but
yeah, I mean, when I was, I feel like 14, 15 was the hardest time for me.
Yeah.
Before finding music. I feel like after I found music, anytime things got hard, I would at least have a pretty solid distraction.
So what was your first song you wrote then?
My first song was called Well Anyways. And my friends always make fun of me that it, so the lyrics.
So Well Anyways.
Yeah, I was like, well anyway, why did you go away and leave me here to stay for all eternity? I don't know, no, no, no. And my friends are always like, how could you rhyme anyways with eternity? Like eternity?
Anyway.
I'm like, it works, man.
Eternity. I think it works fine. I think it totally works fine. Well, I got to sing mine now. My chorus was nothing's left for me to be. Nothing's left for me to see. No one seems to care for me. No one seems to care about me.
Nice.
Yours is much better than mine. But that's how it went, yes.
Hey, there's something that I wanted to ask you about, because this was something that we talked about in our van on this tour, and then I saw that you guys did this. You went back and re-recorded songs
yeah.
from your earlier albums.
Yeah,
that's
we did.
So cool. How did it go?
I mean, people like it, right? Yeah.
Why did you do it?
Okay. Well, a couple of reasons, and I'm going to be completely honest. The first record especially is pretty poorly recorded. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't have a lot of money. And it's just a weird recording. It just sounds strange. My voice sounds weird, and everything about it is just not good. So it'd been 15-year anniversary, and we did a tour where we played the entire album. So when you start preparing the songs to be played and you're listening to them, I was like, I just wish this was just better.
Yeah.
So then I was just thinking, like, why don't bands do that?
I love it.
No one does it. I don't know why. We went to the studio. We already know the songs. So we just went in, and we try to do it really faithfully, like same tempos. We use the same tunings. We didn't tune anything lower. And one thing I was really a stickler about specifically was drum fills.
Uh-huh.
Because I hate when you see a band live and the drummer decides to change that fill to something that's like, in his mind, better live.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not better. He thinks it's better because he's old, like sick of playing the old one.
Yeah.
Right? So I was a stickler for that. So the drum fills are the same, and the pretty much like all the vocal melodies and stuff are all the same, and it's the same tempos. And yeah, it
so
came
what,
out really,
what did
really
you
well.
Allow yourselves to change? Just like guitar arrangements,
tones,
and layering?
Like, just better tones. Like some of the stuff, it was just hard to make out what was going on. When I'm listening back, like, what was that lead? Trying to figure it out because
yeah.
it's buried or the tone is so strange. So we pretty much just changed the tones. It was tempting to add like extra backup vocals. Mm-hmm. Didn't do it.
Nice.
We did all the same. So I think that was the key, because we want people to listen to the new versions, not the old ones. I mean, the old ones are there, always going to be there. But I think that's the key, is we really wanted people to be like, all right, I'm going to check out this band
yeah.
for the first time, because it still happens. Just like people are discovering Punchline every day. Even these people today, some of them never heard of your band before.
It's so scary to think that someone's going to search for us and find something from the year 2000 and write us off.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
I feel you, brother.
Yes, like Smash Into Pieces, our first song, like we had to redo it.
Yeah.
It's terrible recording.
So how did it go over with the fans?
Absolutely great.
Nice.
Everyone is so on board. Cool. No, I didn't hear a single complaint.
I like the old one better.
No, the only complaint, like not really actually, you know? Does anyone have any comments on the Silverstein Redux? Anybody? Nobody? I get a thumbs up.
We've toured a bunch, and I'm sure you have with I Am the Avalanche.
Yeah,
and their first record. You know, I got to know their songs live, and then listen to their record, which by that point had been out a couple years, and the songs were much slower. So there were a couple of their songs that I loaded into a recording session, and I sped them up just for my own listening pleasure. Because it just...
How do you even do that? You speed up a song without
flex
changing
flex
the...
Flex time.
You are a nerd, dude. That's amazing. Oh, my goodness. So you got the band going in high school with Chris. You've decided at 7 years old that this is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So I know that you tried to do the traditional thing that bands did back in the late 90s, which was you make a demo tape.
Yep.
You put it in the mail with maybe a photo of yourself or whatever. So you did that and you sent it out and nothing happened.
We sent it out and we were a three piece and we started sending out some demo tapes and our first two CDs. And, you know, we have some good rejection letters.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
You like, keep them?
Yeah. Chris has them for sure.
But any notable labels?
Like, Drive Through, Lobster. and I think there were some others, but there came a point where we said, you know what, let's just work hard and do our thing and let's wait for somebody to come to us. And that's how we'll
and
know.
They did.
That's how we'll know we're doing something right. And I remember like telling my band that, and in my head, I'm thinking like, I hope this works.
You're like, I'm just bullshitting everybody, but whatever.
But then we were on tour with a band called Unsung Zeros. And we played in Gainesville, Florida, and this was 2002, and Fueled by Ramen came out to see us. And then a couple of days later, we got a phone call. And, you know, by this point, we were doing full U.S. tours ourselves and DIY, you know, regional tours and, you know, meeting all sorts of bands. And
that must have been hard to set up, though, back in those days where even the internet was still pretty primitive. Like, you know, people were emailing, but there was no social media.
Yeah.
There, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it must be
hard even to remember what
it's. But all it's happened. It's interesting because you see how much of it was personal relationships and how much stuff got done then because of just who you know. And it's still the same now, even though you can, you know, email anybody you want out there, you're still... I still feel like those personal relationships are the underlying network between everything.
No, totally. I mean, and I'm sure in those early days of touring as an indie band, that's like when you met like Bayside, for example.
Yeah.
And they're still a band that you're very aligned with.
For sure.
Do a lot of stuff with them. Anthony sang on your new record. I think, didn't Jack play something on your...
Jack, I feel like Jack has played on almost every album.
Right, exactly. So, you know, so I absolutely agree. You also had Matt Thiessen from Reliant K.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big get.
Yeah. So I'm from Pittsburgh and Matt came through Pittsburgh with Reliant K many times over the years. And one time he told me, he said, you should move to Nashville. And I said, oh really? He's like, yeah, man, Nashville is where it's at. He's like, me and all my buddies are down there writing songs. And then a couple months later, I called him. I'm like, yo, okay, I moved to Nashville. I'm here. He was like, damn, I guess I better take you under my wing here and live up to my part of the bargain. So we were buds and, you know, wrote some songs. And he would hang out at my studio there. And it was cool. One time, funny Matt story is I was going on vacation or on tour or something. And I told him, I was like, hey, I'm going to leave you a key. So you can come here and record or hang out. And I got back and he had recorded a whole album of demos for his Matt Thiessen and the Earthquakes album.
Okay, yeah.
And so I have like all the demo, all the sessions are on my computer. And it's pretty
wild.
Cool. Yeah, it's pretty wild.
So you became, that's something, a narrative I want to talk about, how you moved to Nashville and now you're back in Pittsburgh. How did this all start with you getting into the production side, recording side, audio engineering side? Was that something you were always into? Because it's difficult to kind of, you know, hone your skills when you're on the road so much.
Yeah. You know, I think the whole path of being in music and in a band, I feel like, you know, when we started, I got into songwriting and trying to figure out how to get those ideas out there. And then we needed shows. So it's like you take on learning how to book yourselves.
Yeah.
And then you have to learn how to do design so you can make the t-shirt, so you can afford to do the things and make the recordings. And there came a point where, you know, we would go and record with producers who I loved and learned so much from, but then you realize, like, we just don't have this money to keep going into the studio and into the studio. It's like, I feel like if I could figure out how to do this, I can, you know, process my ideas more. So that's kind of how, like, got into recording. And
interesting.
Had
the creative side and the financial side.
You know,
it's not something you'd think, but it's kind of obvious.
Yeah, and had some friends who really inspired me to get into recording. My buddy Harrison, who we've done some stuff with. And yeah, just kind of threw myself into that. And around the same time that I was getting into production, I fell into some opportunity where a buddy in LA was putting together a music library of, like, background tracks for reality TV shows. You know how, like, you're watching TV? Literally every TV show, most all times, has music playing, even just, like, very quietly in the background. So I made songs like that where, you know, you're just making, like, this week we're making songs in the style of The Killers.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think I've always wanted to ask somebody that works in that field, because some of that stuff you're hearing, and I notice it most when it's like sports highlights.
Yeah.
Because it'll be like, there will be a Rage Against the Machine riff.
Yeah.
That's verbatim, except one note they'll change.
Totally.
Like, that's what people do.
Well, I don't.
Like, it's talked about. They're like, all right, we need to make something that sounds like this. And then, like, well, not, how about just this exactly? We're just going to, like, turn it backwards or something, like,
yeah,
you know,
play
it backwards.
I never set out to, you know, and from talking to people, you know, sometimes you'll write something and it will be close, and sometimes people will want you to write something that's, like, as close as you can get it.
Yeah.
I've never been put in that position, which I'm glad. But speaking of our friend Lauren,
yes, you know, Lauren is our lawyer.
Yeah, we share the same lawyer. if you don't try to sue us, you guys will go down.
Well, now what happens if we have to sue each other over this? Like, something happens here,
Lauren's
slip
gonna
on
hear
the way
this
out,
and start sweating. But years ago, somebody sent us or tagged us in a tweet and said, "This Nickelodeon TV show theme song has a part in it that is verbatim a guitar riff from this Punchline song, Roller Coaster Smoke." And I listened to it, and it was the same notes. Okay? Had that in it. And, you know, not that I didn't, like, see dollar signs. I didn't think, oh, wow, somebody is out there ripping us off. But I'm really curious about that, you know, just like we're here talking about it. But I asked Lauren about it, and he said, here's what's going to happen. He said, if you take this to them, Nickelodeon is going to have their attorneys look back over music history, and you better believe they're going to find this pattern somewhere in previously recorded music, whether it be some classical piece from the 1800s, or, he said, unless they're, he's like, you have to have, you know, okay, so that was the only case, the only element of the song that was similar. So without any other element, you can trace that back.
So it would have to have, like, a lyric or something over it that couldn't be duplicated.
Yeah. Something else that was very specifically similar. And I thought that was really neat.
That is really neat.
Yeah, so if you want to look up, the theme song is Shimmer and Shine, and then the Punchline song is Roller Coaster Smoke. You can decide for yourself.
Okay. I'll play the clips at the end of this too.
Cool. Oh, nice.
Cool. Yeah, because I love that stuff.
Nice.
I actually heard one time, and maybe it's because of what Lauren said, I heard that you can't copyright a guitar riff. Like, just a riff on its own can't be you know, like copyrighted. Like somebody could essentially rip off, you know, a part or whatever, which I don't know if that's true. Like if you just started a record with the Enter Sandman riff, like, I don't think that's going to fly.
I don't know.
But that's what I heard.
The whole thing's fascinating.
Shout out to Alan Cross, who has a great podcast. That's where I heard that. So
oh, nice.
I feel like everything that guy says is true.
Yeah.
So it's probably true.
Are you really going to play those clips?
Yeah.
Cool.
Hell if yeah. I can find the nice. Nickelodeon one,
yeah, yeah.
Then I'll definitely play it.
Cool. The Roller Coaster Smoke punchline song, it's about the TV show Lost. Just
oh, FYI. Yeah?
Anybody, any Lost fans?
My hands way the fuck up.
There were...
I've watched it three times.
Nice.
And every time it gets like, I don't know if I hate myself or the show more. I know.
Is there someone out there, I wonder, who's re-edited it without like taking out all the bullshit?
Oh, yeah.
You know, editing it down to maybe a season.
There's so much. There's so much bullshit. There's so many plot lines that go nowhere.
Yeah. It's an emotional show, though.
Are you a Game of Thrones fan?
I am. Are you
caught up? Have you seen the?
Yeah, I watched the first episode.
What were your thoughts?
I thought it was good. I mean, it's cool setup. Seeing all the characters meet, like, ooh, they've never been in a room together. You know, you've been waiting this whole time. I like reunions. You know.
Yeah, I absolutely hated the first episode. And I think the episode back, and I think it's because so much of it was having to remind us of who. All these people are and what happened, you know, and I think I'm just like, yeah, we know he's a eunuch. Do we have to bring this up again?
Yeah.
You know? So I was like pretty like rolling my eyes through most of that episode. But I'm still gonna watch it religiously and I'm still excited about
tomorrow
it.
Tomorrow night? Yeah.
All right. Number two. So yes, no spoilers.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So let's talk about this 37 while we're still in the nerdy mode. Yep. So for everybody here that doesn't know, Punchline has a record, I'd say one of your most popular records.
For sure.
It's called 37 Everywhere. And basically the premise of the record, or at least the title of the record, is that if you start looking for the number 37... Just, you know, in your everyday life, looking around. What time is it right now? Oh, it's 4:40. Imagine it was 4:37. I would shit my pants. But no, that's the premise of the record, right?
Right.
That's a pretty good explanation.
That's right.
So this is something that's been in your mind understanding for your whole life?
Yeah, so
what point did it
happen? It was around the time that me and Chris met and... I started seeing the number 37 everywhere, and this was kind of before everyone had a...
Everyone's looking around the room right now.
But I would hear it, you know, and it seemed like every time I would be watching a TV show and they said some number that, you know, the script writer made up, that it would be the number 37, and it would appear in movies and in books and in TV shows, and every time I would look at the clock, it would be on the 37th minute. And I was starting to freak myself out a little bit, and I told a friend and told another friend, and Chris was like, I see it too. Like, it's so bizarre. It's so strange.
Did he seen it before too without you guys ever talking about it? Or once you brought it up, he sort of started?
I think it was once I brought it up, but it just became this thing within our friend group. And then when we were making the album, we wanted to give the album a name that meant something to our group. And 37 was like our thing. So we called it 37 Everywhere and wanted to see if everyone else was seeing 37s too. And to this day, I get tagged in people's Taco Bell receipts that have their order number 37.
Right.
I get tagged in all those photos.
Right. Except there's the same number of, like, it's not like 37 can come up any more than 36. In fact, 36
you might
come up more.
You might
Taco
say
Bell
that,
receipt.
But if you look for it, you will be surprised.
Interesting. One of the creepiest things about this, and I'm sure you know, but I love this so much, is the album reached number 37 on the Billboard Heat Seekers charts.
How about that?
Which you can't make that happen. Accident. Like, you can't. That has to just happen.
That was Fuel by Ramen's marketing genius.
But they couldn't do that.
It actually wasn't. I hope that didn't sound serious. It was not.
That must have been jaw dropping when you got that number.
Yeah, it was pretty wild, and it's so cool, man. How many, you know, it's not uncommon for people to come up to me at shows and like, I just got a 37 tattoo, and you know, hearing other people's 37 stories, and we get messages all the time. I'm not kidding. We will get random Facebook messages from people that we don't know, have nothing to do with the band, who found us because they went looking for, you know, oh my God, I see the number 37 too, and I found you guys, and you have like an album about it.
Right.
And so we get no messages about 36.
Right.
But we get messages about 37.
So you're 38 right now.
I'm 38.
What did you do for your 37th birthday?
I was in Mexico on the beach.
I knew you'd celebrate it a little harder than 36.
I went and swam in a cave, and I hung out with friends, and it was one of the best days of my life. It was fantastic.
And when you finally turned 38, I'm not sure how many days ago that was, but were you like, oh no, this is just all downhill from here?
I thought about just telling people that I was still 37, and you know, you process that, and then I realize, I'm glad I had a really good 37th year. So 37 in the year that I was 37, Punchline played more shows than we had played in probably the previous 5 years total.
Yeah.
Because I had been living in Nashville, and we put out one record while I was there, but didn't play many shows. And then when I moved back, we all said, you know what, let's hop in the van and let's do this like we've never done this before, and made a new record called Lion, yep, which is the album that we're out promoting now, if you guys want to check it out. And so this chapter of Punchline that we're in right now started about 2 years ago when I moved back from Nashville. Yep. And we said, you know, let's do this like we've never done it before. And we have such a good group of guys right now. And I feel like, It's exciting. I feel like we're accomplishing a lot.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Did you hear about the number 37 movie?
Yes. Yeah. I exchanged some messages with the people making that, but I haven't seen it. No, I haven't heard about it in a while.
Yeah. I just know because I Googled today.
Yeah.
And it popped up. I think the movie came out just like last year, maybe, or something. So
wow.
I wonder if there's any, obviously the director or whoever wrote it or whatever would probably have some knowledge of you guys, I'd say. I think, right?
I believe that I exchanged messages with somebody from the movie, but I gotta follow up on that. There's so many people.
Very interesting. You also released your first single from the record on March 7th.
Yeah, 3-7's kind of our day.
On purpose, that's
the Punchline holiday.
So every day is that, that's you do something
we
special
try to
for
do,
the fans
yeah,
or release
yeah,
something?
Every year we try to do something on 3-7.
Awesome, man. Well, dude, thank you for taking the time to do this.
Absolutely.
What else to tell the people? These people, the people listening all over the world?
One thing that
he's
we
looking
do...
He's looking at his cheat sheet, by the way.
Yeah. One thing that we do while we're on tour is, that, you know, while you're on tour, you miss your pets that you have at home. And it's really fun being out on the road, but your pets are at home and you're away from them. So we ask people to send us pictures of their pets to punchlinepets@gmail.com. And at the end of every tour, we make a video out of all the pet pictures that we've received. And it's just been a really fun way to connect with people and promote the idea of, if you don't have a pet, to go and adopt a pet. And so we're in Norfolk right now, and the place around here, according to Yelp, 4.5 stars. Virginia Beach Animal Care seems to be like the local adoption center to go to. So we're always trying to, you know, connect with people about their pets and see all the cute pets that we can. So if you have a cute pet,
yeah,
make some noise for your pets.
Do you have pets yourself?
I do. I have a cat and a dog.
What are their names?
Their names are Pippa and Marlo, and they're the light of my life.
I love it.
Yeah. I've been having dreams about my dog.
Where's
punchlinepets@gmail.com.
We got a couple pets around here. We should do some pictures before you go.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
With, you know, with Zora and I forgot the other. Reggie, of course, in full effect. Fucking full effect.
Yeah.
Wait, no Reggie and the Full Effect fans? Okay.
I got a story about him that's pretty funny. We played in Springfield, Missouri, probably 10 years ago with Reggie. And load in that day, you know, setting up your gear, go backstage, and I'm sitting in the tiny green room, and James DeWeese walks in and, you know, just kind of gives me a nod and goes over into the corner. He has a backpack and he kind of puts backpack on the table and is doing something. So I go back to what I'm doing and he leaves the room and I like look over to where he was and I see that he had set something up on the table and it looked like a little plaque. And I walk over to it and he had set up, it was a Pizza Hut Employee of the Month plaque to James DeWeese. And he had taken it out of his bag and set it up against the wall and lit some candles around it and walked out of the room. And I just thought that was, I don't use this word that often, but baller. That was a baller move.
That's amazing. So I think literally, I know we had some fan questions here before. One was about the pets.
Oh, nice.
But does anyone have any questions for Steve? Yes, Neil. Do you want to talk into the microphone or do you want to, I could just rephrase it.
Yeah, you can rephrase it.
Okay.
So with the, was it So Nice to Meet You or Pleased to Meet You?
So Nice to Meet You.
Yeah. So you guys did like a super, super, like pretty much just like, hey, can you promote this album and go listen to it? And you guys did really well. Like what, like was that, how, like first of all, how good did that feel? And like, how like, like how hard was it to just like rely on people being like, "Hey, can you go do this without like any type of like firing or anything?" Like that?
Yeah,
I'm gonna have a lot of trouble rephrasing that question.
So I got it. So the question was asking how the, so in 2012 we released an EP called So Nice to Meet You that reached the number one rock album on iTunes. And it was a total DIY effort, no label, virtually $0 spent on any kind of marketing or Facebook ads.
Yeah.
And the story of it was that a couple days before the EP came out, we played a show in Long Island and we bombed. We bombed. We were so bad and we were not tight and we were awkward. And that stuff will stick with you, you know, if you have a bad show. And the whole drive home, we just talked and we kind of told ourselves, like, we can't, like, feel like we're kind of like screwing around with this opportunity that we have to play music. And we got ourselves all pumped up and we said, let's release this EP this week. Okay. So we scheduled the EP to come out a couple days later. And,
so it was already recorded and everything.
So it was already recorded and we were just kind of sitting on it. But that show made us be like, all right, now's the time. Let's do this. So we scheduled it to come out and on the day that we released it, I remember waking up and I had some text messages from people saying, is Chris serious about what he said on Facebook? And I didn't know what this meant. So I go to Facebook just like everyone else who was texting me and I saw that Chris, our bass player, wrote a note that said, if our album doesn't go to number one on iTunes, I'm going to quit the band. Yeah. Saying that this is... So I read that, and I read it on Facebook, and I called him. I'm like, what are you doing, man? You know, people have asked me, like, oh, was that some plan you guys had? I'm like, no. I woke up and saw that he wrote this note and took a picture of it. So he explained it to me, and he said, look, you know, we're out here, this DIY independent band, and if people don't listen to us and people don't engage and consume and buy our music, how can we sustain ourselves and keep going? So I don't know if it was an empty threat because it
right.
it it got to not number one overall iTunes. It did break the top 10, which was pretty cool. But it got to number one rock charts, and we thought that did the job. But it was really cool. Our fans, they really got behind it, and I still have people telling me like, dude, I bought 25 copies of it. So it was super sweet. Very, very cool.
25 digital copies is very unrewarding.
Yeah.
just a mess in your iTunes. That sounds awful.
Hi, puppy.
I'm sure people bought 37. That's probably why it went to number one. Absolutely.
And you kind of hinted on it earlier. Like, the last time you guys came into the area, you guys played the Norva.
Yeah.
And it was with Bowling for Soup. And
yeah.
It had to have been 12 years ago. And literally, Punchline is like the one band I'm like, other than like Jawbreaker who just played.
Yeah.
Like, who no one saw coming back. But you guys were active. An active band that never came. And I'm like, I can't believe they haven't come back yet. Like on the Gin Blossoms tour, you guys played like Northern Virginia,
mm-hmm.
but like never in this area. So like as far as the touring goes, like was it all just you had moved to Nashville, or was it like, okay, like let's just not be a touring band and just do like Pittsburgh shows?
So I think after the Bowling for Soup tour, so that was late 2006, and so then by 2007. We had been on the road basically from 2000 to 2007, just playing year round, year after year, and we were burnt out. And I remember telling Vinny from Less Than Jake, "Yeah, I think we're gonna like chill for a little bit with touring, and you know, it's just becoming too much." And he said, "Be careful, man. It's like if you get out of the circuit, he's like, it's going to be hard to get back in it." And he was definitely right. But I feel that, you know, by us kind of scaling back our touring efforts for a minute, you know, that's when we started a label called Modern Short Stories, and we released a couple of our records ourselves, and it just allowed us to focus on these other pieces of of our music. And that has brought us back to touring, but the Punchline Empire.
There you go. Anyone else? Oh, we got a question in the back. That's Melissa. Can you really speak up?
Yeah.
I will do my best. Mine's not going to be as hard hitting as Neil's, a little more basic. But you've had some really kind of interesting and cool guest spots on your albums. If you had someone living or dead, who would be your like ideal dream artist to feature on an album?
Julian Casablancas. 100%.
Look at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, I'm a big Strokes fan, and that's a band. I was talking to somebody last night about how I used to be so into the punk scene and the music that we do. I listened to it so exclusively, and now I realize I missed out on the Strokes while they were at their peak, because I would only listen to Saves the Day.
Right. It's funny. Ball. We had a post in the group on the group Facebook just the other day about records that we've, you know, got discovered later. And Under the Cover of Darkness, what the hell is that record called? The yellow cover. You know what song?
It's my favorite Stroke song.
Yeah, it's the best song. Whatever that album is called, I definitely slept on that for years.
Yeah.
And it happens with records.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to be too punk.
Well, it's interesting, you know, with us releasing records, and I'm curious if you guys have experienced this with Silverstein, but sometimes, you know, you'll release a record and it doesn't feel like people get it, but then 5 years later, you know, the requests start coming in at the shows, and it just takes time.
It's really weird
how that
happens.
The same way with our own music, where, you know, 5 years down the road, I'll feel totally different. I'll like this album more than this other album that at the time I thought was the other way around.
It's called Angles. That's the album.
Nice.
There you go. I had to look it up. Anyone else before we let this man get back to his concert? Yes, Brian.
Not Brian.
Yes, go on. Sorry about that.
So it's a question that I always wonder for every band, because I think in a lot of ways, this part of being in a band is harder than writing a good song, but how did you guys come up with your band name?
The band name, I have these memories of, I just used to write Punchline in notebooks, like doodle, like Punchline, oh, that'd be a cool band name, and then we needed a band name, and everybody kind of put in their idea, and the only other idea on the table was our old drummer PJ suggested 300-yard drive, which I think was because he lived by a driving range. There wasn't much meaning behind it, nor was there with punchline, but you know, it was like A or B. And
a golf themed band would be sick.
Yeah, so that's how we came up with punchline. Hey, can I ask you one more?
Oh yeah, yes.
Because I was talking to a bunch of people about voice memos yesterday. Do you do a lot of voice memos with coming up with ideas and whatnot?
You want to hear one?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of right now. We're kind of starting the writing process a little bit for the next Silverstein stuff. Yeah. Hey, hey,
whoop whoop.
And so my voice memos, and I might edit this later because some of these might be real weird, but I usually just do this. This is how I do it. So I don't know how well you're going to hear it. So this one's 32 seconds long. I think it's just a little guitar riff, but no, not that one.
That's what all mine sound like. That's so funny.
D, it's in B on that ninth fret.
Nice.
No one ripped this off.
You've already learned that you can and you won't get in trouble for it.
So, yeah, so that's what I do. I just literally...
Do you have a system for labeling them?
No, that's the worst part. And now it just shows my address.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I really should take the time to make the title of the note what I say.
Yeah.
At the beginning, like, this is in this tuning or whatever. But I don't bother.
Yeah, I don't either.
You got one for us?
I have no, let me find one. I don't have much of a system other than if it's a really good idea, I'll label it dope. So if I scroll through here, I'll see like.
You have a system of alarms of dates on your phone for people, how many days people have been alive, but dope is your system.
Well, I take care of other people more than I take care of myself. Let's see what I got. Oh, how's this?
Crossing my fingers.
One, two, three. Now you don't fool me.
Oh, it's way better than mine.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got a bunch. I got about
there you go.
I got about 10,000-20,000 voice memos.
Yeah, that's very intense.
Yeah.
I don't have that many, but but yeah, dude, thank you. Any more before there's so many. Brandon Dave, yeah, what's up?
I feel like I got here late to the party, and I'm missing some context. Nice, nice.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you a pineapple on pizza guy?
I'm not. I'm not even really a pizza guy, which is.
No, I dated a girl for 4.5 years, and it didn't go so well at the end. She didn't like pizza.
Yeah.
And after we broke up, everyone's like, dude, red flag right there, man. Never trust a woman that doesn't like pizza.
You saying that I have no chance of ever dating you then, huh?
I didn't say that. all right. Well, anyone else before we let the man go? Okay, ooh, yes, fun. Carissa.
Nice. Yeah.
Was that, like, just on the episode, or was it, like, a specific the series?
So the song song is called Friend from the Future. It's the first song off of our new album, Lion, if you want to check it out. And the song mentions San Junipero, which pretty sure it's season 2, episode 4. And that's my favorite episode. And that show, oh, my God, the show's so good. It's so... Do you watch Black Mirror?
Well, I watched the first one where like there's a weird pig fucking.
Yeah, I always tell people to skip the first. I always tell people to skip the first.
I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And then, well, I also didn't know, maybe this is obvious, but I didn't know that like each one was different. No one told me that part. Yeah. I just thought it was like a new, you know, cool Netflix show. So I watched that and I was like, I don't really feeling like these characters or like, this is weird. So I never watched it again.
Yo,
and now I know I should, but I just haven't.
You're like, why is everybody into this pig sex show?
Exactly.
But yeah, I love Black Mirror. And if I could rank all of my favorite episodes sometime at a later date.
Do you know them all, like season two, episode four,
I love
season two? Like,
San Junipero is my favorite.
You're such a numbers guy.
And Be Right Back, which I think is the episode before it, season two, episode three, is my second favorite. That's the one where the guy dies and is replaced by AI. And that is trippy. I don't like the ones that are super scary and terrifying, like the White Bear episode. I mean, it's good, but I like the more thought-provoking technology. This could actually happen.
About the choose your own adventure one.
Yeah, that was neat. I got to the end of it. I'm like, did I do it right? Yeah.
Yeah, and it just keeps going.
Yeah, how different was it each time?
It was very. The endings were real different each time.
And yeah.
After a while, it was like 2.5 hours.
And I was kind of
tired.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Crazy. Yeah. Crazy. All right. Well, I'm going to play the clips of the songs.
Cool.
For people to hear how you got ripped off.
Nice.
But I also always play music at the end of the show, and I'd love to play maybe your favorite Punchline song if you have one.
Cool. I would say Punchline, Darkest Dark.
Darkest Dark.
Darkest Dark. Yeah.
Darkest Dark.
That's the song that Matt Thiessen sings on.
Perfect.
Yeah. We're opening with it tonight in Virginia Beach. If anybody who is hearing this in the future wants to travel back to the past.
It sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
Awesome, man.
All right, thank you so much, Steve.
Yeah, yeah,
thank you, everyone.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Woo!
Hell yeah.
The first live show is in the books. Yeah. So there it is with Steve and 35 or 40 of my sinners. Thank you, everybody, for making this happen. Thank you to you for listening to this. Now, I'm going to play these clips. I'm going to start off with the Nickelodeon theme song for Shimmer and Shine. It's got 11 million views on YouTube, so clearly people know about this. I've never heard of it, but here's the first clip.
Two genies in a bottle, up in the starry sky.
Okay, there is Shimmer and Shine, the theme song.
On Nickelodeon.
Now, let's hear Punchline's Roller Coaster Smoke.
Yeah, well,
Wow. Well, I definitely hear the similarities, and that's incredible. I mean, that could be a coincidence. I really don't know. But hey, regardless, shit like that is very, very cool. Have you checked how many days old you are right now? Head over to punchlion.com/days old, and you can find out how many days old you are. I'm coming up on 14,000. Pretty exciting. But like Steve said, you know, I mean, it is kind of a big deal. And why not have something else to celebrate? Anyway, thanks again for listening. Make sure you're subscribed. I will be back with another brand new episode next Tuesday. And once again, big shout out to Steve from Punchline for doing this. And all my sinners, I will leave you with a track. Here it is, Dark is Dark by Punchline on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. I'll see you next week.
When it gets hard, maybe I know where you are. Even in the darkest dark, I'm there with you. I'm there with you. I'm there with you.
I feel the blood running through my veins. Got so zoomed out, it's all in frame. I never want to let you get away without knowing I loved you all the same. Can you feel the chills running through your arms? Don't tell me there's nothing more to this. All I want you to look at me.
Don't really look at me. When it gets hard.